once you have that mindset that if I have one bite, I'm going to get out of control, a lot of times it becomes self-fulfilling. So I really tried to teach people that, your primitive response may be out of your control, but what you choose to do is not. And it's not always like an instant process for people. Sometimes it takes a lot of practice to get to that point, but it's so freeing when you can realize like you can be around any food, you can have any food and not be out of control.
Did you know that more than 60% of people struggle with binge eating, emotional eating, stress eating, boredom eating, or other out of control eating behavior? And did you also know that the way out is never through controlling the food? The way out is not another diet or meal plan, and that's actually what keeps us trapped longer. Our first step towards healing our relationship with food is to stop restricting and to release all the rules that we have around food. Next, we create awareness around the triggers, the linked thought patterns, and the emotions and traumas that trigger us to turn towards food as a coping mechanism. If today's conversation is speaking to you, I want to invite you to download my Food Freedom Workbook completely free at makepeacewithfood.com to help you get started on your healing journey. And because I know from experience how lonely and frustrating this journey can be, then I want to expand on that invitation and invite you to schedule a free 30-minute food freedom coaching call with me as well. The link is in the workbook. Welcome back, athletes. I'm your host, Sherry Chaban, and with each episode, I am honored to be your coach and guide in the journey to fall in love with fitness and ultimately yourself. My intention in each episode is to help you release the old story of who you are and step into the one you are always meant to be. Through these conversations, together, we will step away from focusing on the doing and step into the being so that health and fitness is not just what you do, but who you are. On this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness, Katherine Hansen, author of Brain Over Binge, shares her personal journey of overcoming binge eating and how she helps others recover from this disordered eating behavior as well. We discuss the influence of diet culture, the role of the brain in binge eating, and the importance of changing our mindset and self-image to break free from self-sabotaging habits. Katherine emphasizes the power of understanding the brain's reward system and urges listeners to believe in their ability to overcome binge eating. You don't want to miss this episode. You will learn the strategies to overcome binge eating and regain control over your relationship with food, and to discover how mindfulness and emotional regulation can help in achieving food freedom. Now, before we dive in, I want to remind you really quick that there are still a couple spots open for you to join me in Transformation in Paradise, Costa Rica this November, November 25 to December 2nd, where we will be releasing self-sabotaging habits and addictive behaviors such as binge eating that have been keeping us from becoming the highest version of ourselves. So if this sounds like something you'd like to be a part of, you can head on over to sherrychaban.com/retreats to learn more and to reserve your spot there. Now we're almost completely sold out and just 6 weeks from the most transformational retreat on the planet. And so if this sounds like this is something you'd like to be a part of and you still have some questions about it, make sure to reach out soon. And by the way, if you rate and review this podcast on iTunes and send over the screenshot, you'll receive a 10% off voucher to join me in Transformation in Paradise this November. All right, athletes, now without further ado, let's meet Katherine. Hi, Katherine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Sherry. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm so happy you're here, and I felt so honored to be on your podcast as well just a few weeks ago. And so it's so beautiful to reconnect and to see your light and to get to talk a little bit more about a conversation that we are both so deeply passionate about. And we use really our own experience to help others recover from something very similar. And so before we get into that, I want to welcome you to the show, Katherine, and then ask you as well to maybe share your story as to why you help people overcome binge eating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's really what my mission is. I recovered from bulimia in 2005. I say bulimia, my main issue was binge eating. That was really the behavior I feel like I could not control. And I used overexercise, like very extreme exercise, as a form of purging. It really became a life-consuming habit that took over my life for about 6 years, and I tried all sorts of treatment approaches, traditional therapy, and it did not work for me. And I ended up finding a way to end the habit that was really different from anything I had learned before. It's viewing binge eating in terms of the brain. And once I learned that and I recovered, I felt the need to share it with the world. So that's really been my mission since really the day I recovered. I started, conceptualizing how I would share it with other people. So I wrote Brain Over Binge, which is my story, and the Brain Over Binge Recovery Guide, which is more of the self-help version of how you can apply the brain-based concepts in your own life. I've also created a course and I have a website and a podcast and all the things that I just try to continually educate and empower people that they're capable of overcoming this.
Oh, so good. I love this. And I'm so happy you're doing this work because I think many of us are silently and secretly absorbed and consumed in a binge eating or some sort of out of control eating behavior. And I don't think a lot of us recognize that. And I think once the diet culture sort of enters our world and we're starting to think differently and we're starting to view food differently, I think that's where things really start to change. And of course, over time, we've been doing this for so long that we have no idea even what that sense of normal is. Coming back to, I want to say the word normal as being that relaxed version of ourselves around food and feeling completely in tune with our body and very connected with our satiety cues and our hunger cues. And so I'm super curious, Catherine, around your story. I'm just curious as to when it started. When in your life did you start that binge eating behavior and why did you come to that place? What triggered that?
Yeah. I mean, I was a teenager and at the time I was like you just said, like really just in touch with my body. I was an athlete. I competed in several sports. I was a collegiate distance runner. I mean, not at the time I started my binging, but I was 15 years old and a lot of my friends were like starting to diet and starting to worry about their weight. And I grew up in an environment that weight was, it was always a message that you should always try to control your body. You should always make sure that you don't gain weight. So even though I wasn't overweight, I was an athlete, I started to think, well, what if I gain weight? Like maybe it's my job now to start to control my weight. So I started kind of thinking about it, not really doing much about it. But then I had a tonsillectomy, which made me not eat for, a few weeks as my throat healed and I lost weight. And it happened really quickly. And I was like, oh, well, this solves the problem of like me being concerned about my weight. Just kind of lost weight because I couldn't eat. So I decided, okay, I'm not going to go back to normal eating habits. I'm going to continue this restriction that had started with the surgery. And I just never went back to my normal eating habits. Little did I know restricting myself like that would send me into really 8 years of a struggle with food. I started with 2 years of restriction, went into anorexia, and then started binging. So it was really about 8 years that I struggled and was the initial restriction that set me down that path.
Wow. I'm so curious because I actually really resonate with your story. And as you were just sharing, I just felt that energy because I also grew up being a child athlete and I was super involved in sports. And I don't remember exactly when the whole body image thing became so fixated in my mind. I don't know if that was an age thing. And I'm trying to think because we just spoke offline and we just were talking about how we also have kids. And my girls now, they're 14 and 13 years old. They're starting high school and we talk about nutrition and we talk about food, and I feel this generation has a massive disadvantage than we did simply because there's just more processed food, there's more variety, there's more options available for them. And in fact, now when you walk into the grocery store, there's more food-like substances than there is actually real food. And so we have these conversations, but I'm always super hyper aware to not maybe say something that might provoke anything in them. And I constantly check in with them. They've already shared with me a few girls in their classes started releasing weight and really started getting a little bit more picky with their food. And so I just want to continue to have that conversation with them just so that I know that they're not going to go down that path. But I'm super curious what your opinion is. Does it start because we are consumed in an athletic environment where our body is important, our fitness is important, the way that we perform is important, and then all of a sudden there's all this weight being placed on food and nutrition? Or do you think it is an influence from our society, or is it an age thing?
I mean, I think it's a combination of all that, honestly, because as we get in our teen years, we start to become more focused on how we look and how we appear to our peers and maybe, people that we like as well. And you start to get more conscious of your body. So I think that that's a natural biological thing, like to start to focus more on your appearance. I think also the upbringing that we grew up in, our role models. I think the sport can be a big thing. I mean, at the time, before I started dieting, I was really big into softball. So I was working on my strength and I was a pitcher. And then just realized that maybe that wasn't the path for me. And I started getting really good at running, and that had a different weight requirement, you know? So I, more I lost weight at first, the better I became running. Well, of course that ended very badly because I got stress fractures and it really ruined my running career, but temporarily it seemed to help. So there is pressures placed from sports, depending on what sport it is. Every sport has sort of a different ideal that people may strive to be. That's just not realistic for them. So I think there's a lot of influences that cause young people to go down this path of dieting. And I think young people are very susceptible because, you know, their brains aren't fully developed and they're not as capable of having those rational choices. So it's really important to have good role models and people who really encourage them to take care of their bodies.
Right. Yeah. So well said. I love that. And I think you're right. I think definitely, and depending on sort of the culture and maybe even the environment that you grew up in and where you went to school and who your friends were and who you spent time with, because I think back again at my girls and, you know, they're both gymnasts. So they're in that environment where they're in leotards all day. There's a lot of body awareness. And actually when they compete, they're not even allowed to wear those little shorts. And you know, just again, just makes me want to become super mindful of the conversations that we have, the language they hear, even just the way that we start to choose our foods. And if anything, I actually want to empower them towards that and not have them also struggle with body image and struggle with their food and really this idea around certain foods being good and certain foods being bad. And I've always shown them and shared with them some concepts around just whole foods and processed foods. And not that it's good and bad. I feel like that oftentimes is sometimes missing in our conversations when we talk about intuitive eating, because intuitively our body would choose foods that are more nutritious for it. And so there's this fine line between saying, okay, let your body choose what it wants, but then also make sure that that doesn't mean that I'm going to choose all the foods that don't serve me, that do actually lead to long-term consequences, that do lead to dis-ease down the line. And so there's this fine, almost balance that we have to just constantly be aware of. And I'm curious as to what you think around that. Like, where do you draw that line, if there is a line, between eating nutritious foods that serve us and the importance around that, and as well as releasing diet mindset and releasing the restrictions that doesn't end up becoming a disordered eating behavior?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great question, and it is a fine line. And I don't think there's one exact answer, but I think it is about teaching young people that all foods have a place. But that kind of all foods aren't necessarily equal in the way that our bodies react to them, and that some foods are better for us than others. Like, I think that's okay for people to know, of course. It's just when we start having severe limits on what we're eating, when we're never allowing ourselves like treats or things that we enjoy, when we think restrictive dieting, I tell people, you know, not to diet restrictively, and they're like, oh, what does that mean? And it comes down to two basic components for me. And one is like calorie restriction. Like, if we're getting ourselves into calorie deficits where we're literally not giving our body enough calories and nourishment, that is definitely restrictive dieting. Like, and I always try to discourage people from doing that. And then there is the severe mental restriction where you're putting absolute limits on your eating and you are creating a lot of stress in your life. You're making it so that you don't want to go out with your friends. You're making it so that life is just a lot more difficult because of these severe limits you're placing. So kind of as long as you're not doing those things, it's okay to try to nourish your body well. It's okay to try to choose mostly foods that serve you. And allow yourself some treats as well.
Right. Oh, so good. Oh, that's so well said. Yeah. And I think a lot of that as well, Catherine, has to do with the intention behind why we're doing something, right? And the intention is also the energy around why we're doing something. And so oftentimes when we actually think about releasing weight, and if you think about what diet culture is and most people who are struggling with their weight, the reason why they want to release weight is actually very reactive. It's because they went to a party and they saw their friends, they look amazing, and there was a lot of comparison and self-judgment, and now they need to release weight. So it's not inspired. It's not something that really they want to do for themselves, but instead because they feel less than or not enough as compared to other people. Or you go to the doctor's office, or you sit down with a nutritionist and somebody makes a comment around how you are overweight or obese and your BMI and all these things. Again, the drive behind that is also reactive. But if instead we are not focused on releasing weight for just the fact of releasing weight, but instead really expanding that even more. And it's about living a life that is full of vitality, a life where we are free to be in our bodies, to do all the things that we love, and then to harness that energy and feeling of health that we can share with others around us and maybe even inspire our kids towards that. So that intention is very different. The ultimate outcome is not focused around releasing weight, but it's around how you want to live your lifestyle. And if you start to really focus on how you want to live your lifestyle and realize just by intuitively feeling it, the foods that we eat that don't serve us, more processed foods, that actually doesn't make me feel good. I don't sleep as well. I feel exhausted. I don't recover well. And maybe I don't even go to the bathroom freely. And or maybe there's a little bit of disturbance or constipation. And so your bowels will tell you exactly what's going on in your body. And so if I actually use that as my cues as to what I should eat more of and maybe what I should eat less of, and the ultimate reason behind that is really around the energy that I want to feel, then I think that becomes a very different intention. And in fact, that becomes way more loving. So instead of reacting because I can't stand myself and I don't like how I look and I can't stand my body and I feel gross and I feel ashamed and that's why I want to restrict, is very different. And I think that is actually what sets the brain up for that reward system. And that's what drives that disordered eating behavior versus saying, I love myself. I deserve to live in my highest state of self, and I want vitality in my life, and I want to be a role model for my kids. And then that intention is so inspired. The way that we're going to choose things for ourselves will be very different. It'll actually be from a place of love, and it has nothing to do with anybody else and what anyone else said. And the side effect of that is the releasing of the weight and the transformation and the health and the body.
Yeah, I think all that is amazingly well, and I agree it's the intention. And I think back to the days that I started restricting after having the tonsillectomy, and it was really all about eating as little as possible, picking the most low calorie foods possible, low fat at the time, like fat was evil, which seems crazy now, but like, it wasn't about how can I nourish myself to feel my best. It was like restrict, restrict, restrict. And it was very not self-caring. And the foods I was choosing were horrible for me. I mean, you think like diet drinks and like artificially flavored diet yogurt. I mean, awful things that were not good for my body. And, now if I want to make some healthy changes to the way I'm eating, I come at it from a completely different way. And like, how can I add foods to my life that are going to make me feel good? It's not about, taking foods away.
Right. Wow. That's so great. So coming back to that time in your life, so you said you struggled for about 8 years and it first started with anorexia. And I'm curious because it seemed like it was kind of something you stumbled on, right? It was as a result of surgery and then there was maybe some weight loss. And I'm curious if people around you at that time made comments about your appearance or said anything to you that made you maybe more encouraged to continue to restrict your calories.
Maybe at first, maybe some people noticed that, oh, she's running faster or whatever. Like there was encouragement in athletics more than with appearance. But I think it just became sort of an addicting thing. I had a more personality that was more perfectionistic, more anxious. And I think once it started, I just got attached to it and I felt like I had to keep doing it and just became something that I focused on. And there's also a lot of brain-based effects that happens when a person starts dieting, when a young person starts dieting. It's just not a good thing. I mean, I don't know if you've heard of the Minnesota Starvation Experiment. Have you heard of that study?
Oh, please share.
I mean, I'll just share it very briefly. It was really the only study to study the effects of human starvation because it's obviously not ethical thing that we can repeat, but it was how it was done to learn how to re-nourish people after war. Like in war, I'm sorry. Hopefully you can edit this. Like in World War II. So these men were who signed up for the study willingly were restricted in their calories. I don't remember exactly how much they were given. They went from like a normal 3,000 calorie diet for a man to like 1400, and they displayed like all the symptoms of anorexia. They started obsessing about food. They started thinking about it all the time. They started like really having obsessive behaviors around food. And then a lot of them ended up binging, ended up with eating disorder behavior. So it's almost like starvation creates eating disorders. And yes, other people come to it from different paths and everyone has a different story. But mine was really purely that restriction. And of course, I'm sure there were personality traits that set me up as far as, like I said, perfectionistic, anxiety, things like that. But really, starvation is a huge cause. I mean, in bulimia, it causes the vast majority of cases. Binge eating disorder is a little bit half and half. Like sometimes the overeating starts first before any diets. But in bulimia, it's 90 something percent of the time, it starts with a diet.
Right. Wow. You know, as you're sharing that study, then it started to ring some bells, and now I do recall it. And to your point, that it was a group of men, which was very different than also studying group of women who generally do suffer from this. And then they were obsessing over food and daydreaming about food, and just food became a very, very big part of their thoughts, and actually expanded and really consumed the majority of their thoughts. And so interesting that also that ended up leading to binge eating. And just coming back to what you just shared around binge eating really being a drive almost from a point of restriction. But in your case, Catherine, what's super interesting is the restriction lasted a couple of years. So it was anorexia for a few years, and then it turned into binge eating, and then eventually also started to become bulimia as well. So can you just expand and just maybe share that journey as to what led from one to the other?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just like the men in the study, I started obsessing about food. I started thinking about it all the time. I started feeling more out of control around food. And as I felt like I was slipping sometimes. Like I had these rigid rules for myself. I was trying to eat as little as possible, but I would periods where I would quote unquote overeat. Really, it wasn't overeating. It was my body getting what it needed. But I started to feel like, oh my gosh, I'm out of control. All I want to do is eat, when it had never really been an issue in my life before that. So I tried to fight this desire for a long time, and it just increased and increased. And then finally, one morning, it was my senior year of high school, and I woke up and like all I could think about was food. And I had just been fighting it for so long, and I ate bowls of cereal and more things from my parents' pantry. And I just was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? It felt like a completely almost out of body experience. Like I was watching myself do this, like I had no control. And then once I kind of got that control back, and once I realized what I had done, I just felt awful. I felt ashamed. I felt physically sick. Back and laid down. I was late for school that day. And then instead of realizing, okay, maybe I'm starving and let me try to start eating normally, I thought, I need to get more control of this. I need to run more. I need to burn off the calories. So I just turned to more restriction. So it became the cycle of restrict. And then eventually I would binge again. And it started happening more and more and more. And it's a very temporarily pleasurable experience when you're relieving yourself from self-induced starvation. So that becomes very rewarding and reinforcing in the brain. It's very, very addicting, like as soon as you start, because any survival-based behavior is going to feel good and addicting. So it quickly became a habit. It qu increased over time until it was really a life-consuming habit. The worst it ever was, I was binging maybe 4 to 5 times a week, and I was exercising on the days after binges for like 7 hours. I mean, massive amounts of time. I, in the early days, tried self-induced vomiting in those moments of shame and moments of like, oh my gosh, what did I do? I have to get control of this. And thankfully, I was never able to. That is something that's severely dangerous behavior. If anyone listening is struggling with that, please seek medical monitoring and help for that, because it's very, very dangerous. But what I was doing was dangerous too. I mean, I was really just abusing my body to try to burn off the calories. And yeah, I mean, that just went on for a very long time, and I gradually put on weight. I mean, no matter how much I was exercising, it couldn't compensate for what I was eating. So over the course of like the 6 years, I probably gained about 50 pounds from the binging, and it really ruined my career in running. It ruined my high school, my end of high school, throughout all of college, after college. Just really felt like that part of my life was gone to bulimia, but it's not something I really lament about. It's just I want to help prevent other people from doing the same.
Wow, you're amazing and you're so inspiring, and you're like the perfect example of how things happen for us and not to us. And you're doing this beautiful, amazing work to help so many people overcome what I find a self-inflicted jail, because that really is when you're trapped in that cycle and it's so hard to get out. And so it's so, I mean, when we look back at the times in our lives where we feel like we've lost time due to these things, they were actually almost your gifts, because now you have that empathetic nature that you can really use to connect with other people who are going through the same struggles and pain as you. And so I actually honor you for it and for sharing this publicly and for doing this work, because it's so incredibly important. And I really cannot stress this enough. And, just being in this space and really speaking to so many people, and even just observing my career in the last 20 some odd years of how I helped people really, really help transform their physical bodies, and realizing that I may have, through some of the diet culture that I had picked up and some of the concepts that I learned from diet culture, also contributed to people's disordered relationship with food. And when I look back, and I just wish I knew better, but at the same time, I was also struggling with the same behaviors as anyone else struggling from restrictions. And so I think what's great about that is looking back and saying, well, it doesn't matter how fit you are, it doesn't matter how much of an athlete you are, it's really at the end of the day, not about the food and it's not about the body, but it's about the brain and it's about this reward system that we set up. And so, if anybody's listening to that, what's so amazing about this conversation is I'm sitting here in front of Katherine Hansen. She's this super fit, badass woman, and she's an athlete. She grew up as an athlete, and here she is also suffering from something that a lot of us suffer and struggle with. And again, it was not about the food, it's not about the weight, it's really about the restrictions and how we create these very rigid rules in our mind that create stress and anxiety and bring the nervous system into that protection mode, into that place where it will seek out food. You are just triggering that part of the brain that needs to eat and it's trying to keep you alive. And that's why it feels like it's an out-of-body experience, because it is. It's triggering that part of the brain that absolutely overrides the frontal lobe. There's absolutely no thought around it. There's no cognitive function. It is just a reflex, almost a primitive reflex that we have, and it's there to keep us alive and to survive. And so I want Catherine, if you're open to it, to just maybe share if there was an aha moment around, okay, I need to heal. Like, was there this bottom moment, this line in the sand moment where you just absolutely had enough? Like, was that turning point moment for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. I kind of want to go back to something you just said about the primitive brain. And I think that was the biggest aha moment, which I'm going to get to like later, but I want to kind of go through something that happened first. There was all these low points. Like you mentioned, did you get to a bottom point where you feel like you have to get better? And I feel like that happened all the time. Like at least once a week, this is the lowest I can go. This is awful. How am I going to get better? And really, when I first got to college, I started therapy based on my cross country coach sending me there forcibly. I mean, like, it wasn't mean, it was a nice thing to do, but the help I got wasn't helpful to me because it wasn't targeting my primitive brain, what had caused this to begin with. It was all about, let's look at your life, let's look at the circumstances and your emotions and depression, anxiety, things that may have led you to need to binge to cope. The whole theory was binging is a coping mechanism. And that theory can serve people and can be helpful to people in certain circumstances. And there is like parts of it that have some truth. But for me, it really made the binging so much more meaningful than it needed to be. It made me think, okay, I'm doing this for this deep reason because I am this broken person. I can't cope with my life. I can't cope with loneliness. I can't cope with sadness. I can't, like, when really I started eating because I was starving and my primitive brain took over and made me binge to keep me alive, which was like a healthy, quote unquote, healthy brain function. It was a symptom of a healthy brain. It wasn't a symptom of me being broken. I mean, sure, I had problems growing up. Sure, like, there are issues in everyone's life that they can say, okay, this is why. Anytime I binged, I could point to something that had stressed me out that day that had led me to feeling like I needed to binge. But like I went through that for about 6 years and never helped me stop binging. So yeah, it helped some people. It did not help me. So the biggest moment was I read a book called Rational Recovery by Jack Trimpe. And at the time it was an alternative to Alcoholics Anonymous. It was for drug addicts and alcoholics. And he really kind of broke it down to that this is your primitive brain. Like he called it the beast brain. And you're not doing it because you're diseased. You're not doing it because, you know, you have all these deep problems. Like this is an ancient part of you driving you toward this pleasure, you know, that you experience as pleasure in the moment. So it really took that realization to be like, oh, like maybe there's nothing wrong with me. Maybe it's just my brain's natural way to keep me alive, and it's become this terrible habit. And maybe I have power to stop it without solving all my other problems, because that's what I had tried to do in therapy. Like, if I become less anxious, I'll stop binging. If I become less depressed, I'll stop binging. So, try to work on all that. Meanwhile, still binging. And when you're binging, it's really hard to become less depressed. So, it's a hard thing to work on other problems where you're trying to stop binging. So, it was like, oh, maybe I can stop binging and still have all these problems. That's kind of what I eventually did.
So great that you went there, because I wanted to go there. And I don't want to knock anybody who's doing work, and really, we're all in this together. We're all in this to help everybody overcome whatever it is that they're really struggling with, and really to help them come out of that pain and that suffering. And so, if conventional therapy is working for you and you're feeling like that's the right path for you, continue. However, I do absolutely 100% agree with what you just said, Catherine. If I've been doing therapy for years and it doesn't seem like I'm actually moving forward, I'm staying in the same place and almost actually addressing more issues than I had before I started, and not really seeing my way out of this and feeling like I need to be in therapy for the rest of my life. Yes, subconsciously, I'm telling myself I'm broken, I'm damaged, I'm not fixable. And this is an issue because we are all fixable. And this is not a broken problem. To your point, Catherine, this is a brain problem and it is a nervous system problem and not a will problem or a desire problem or a discipline problem. And so we really need to address that because I've known so many people who've gone through my program who've suffered for 20 or 30 years with binge eating and can overcome it within 6 months or less. Why? Because, and by the way, they've done the therapies almost their entire life, they've done therapies. And so it really is around working on that part of the brain, as you mentioned, that is really in the driver's seat of all of our behavior. And so I would actually love for you to maybe get into that a little bit more and really maybe address what it means to have that primitive part of the brain driving all of the behavior and why that leads us to binge eating and why it's actually so hard to step out of that. Why is it hard to break that whole cycle?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of our ancient part of our brain. Call it the primitive brain, or in my books, I just call it the lower brain because it separates it from our higher brain, which is our more human brain, the prefrontal cortex, the place that really we have the capacity for self-control, contains our sense of identity. So I try to set that distinction in my book between the higher brain and the lower brain. So as I talk, I guess I'll just say the lower brain, but the lower brain is responsible for our survival, for our habits, for really motivating us toward behaviors it sees as pleasurable, as beneficial to our survival, as, just things that keep us alive. And what happens in binging is that at first it kind of is necessary for our survival. I mean, we actually don't need to binge, we just need more food overall, but it is a survival response. But then the brain gets conditioned to believe it's necessary for survival and it keeps reacting like it's necessary for survival. So you really have this instinct inside of you that's telling you, absolutely must binge. And it almost feels like a life or death situation. Anyone who's ever had the desire to binge understands that in those moments, you feel like you have to binge to stay alive. And people with other habits and addictions, like to drugs and things, feel the same way. Like brain gets conditioned and the substances involved are addicting and you feel driven toward it. And our brain has a motivational pathway. It's really fueled by dopamine that drives us toward behaviors it senses are necessary for survival. So it's like this brain glitch, as I call it. And it's driven by really the force that drives it are the urges to. So this huge aha moment I had was after I read R Rational Recovery. He had said, you binge to cope. Sorry, let me repeat that. Jack Trimpe had said, you drink to cope with not drinking, because when you don't drink, you have all these urges and you want it, and drinking quiets all that. So I was like, oh, I don't know if that relates to binging. But then I realized, like, oh, I'm actually binging to cope with these urges. Because when the primitive brain is telling me you have to binge, you need it to survive, I didn't know how to deal with these urges. I felt so compelled that binging was really the only thing that turned off the urges that made me kind of feel quote unquote normal, even though there was tons of consequences afterward. I felt so much shame. So the binging was really driven by these urges. So all this time in therapy, I had thought, okay, what is binging helping me cope with? And helping me cope with my emotions, my past, my pain. No, it was helping me cope with these primitive brain urges. So that was like really huge. So I think to answer your question, why it's so hard to overcome is that we don't understand these urges. And when they come over us, we don't know what to do. We feel so driven toward it. And I think that learning about the primitive brain, learning that these urges are not you, can help you, that they're not you, like in your human brain. It can help you have a completely different perspective when these urges arise. And then that in turn increases your capacity to not act on them.
So good. So well said. Yeah, I love that part that you said where you really actually think you're gonna die, because that really is the feeling. Like if I don't have this now, if I don't do something about these cravings, like I just need to do this thing, like I really do feel like it's gonna be the end of the world. And so how do you override that signal, Catherine? What is maybe an exercise or a strategy that you share to help override that signal?
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you basically five components that I teach people. The first one is to view these urges as neurological junk. And that's really in contrast to what I learned in therapy, is that these urges are meaningful. They signal something about your deep underlying emotional needs. And it's like my approach is completely different. Like, these urges are junk. Even if, maybe you feel like you started overeating for emotional reasons at first, by the time you want to overcome it, it's a habit. You don't feel like it's causing too much pain in your life. By the time the people read my book, even if there were some initial benefits, or they felt like it had a place, or it started after some pain in their life, by the time they want to recover, this is a brain glitch. This is a habit that keeps repeating over and over, and it's not actually helping them cope with anything. So, viewing those urges as junk. The second is separate the urges to binge from your higher brain. So separate your higher brain from your urges, meaning learning that you are not these urges, because a lot of times they feel so compelling because you think they're a real need. You think there's something you really want that you really need, when they're not. They're completely separate from your actual true wants and needs. The third component is to stop reacting to the urges, and that is like just learning to allow them, learning to experience them, and realize that they're actually not as bad as sort of your lower brain says they're going to be. Like, once you have that degree of separation, you can hear the thoughts, you can feel the feelings without it feeling so compelling. So it's really about taming your emotional reactions and just being as unemotional as possible. The fourth component is to stop acting, which is really a result of the previous three components, because once you connect with your higher brain, once you separate from those primitive drives, you step back into your sense of choice. And it doesn't matter what else you do. Like, there's not some magic formula. You can do any number of things. You can have a list of activities you do, or you can do nothing, as long as you're not acting. And the fifth component is to celebrate success, celebrate not acting, to just really solidify those new neural pathways that you're building. Because the more we celebrate, the more we like solidify our learning. It's the reason we praise children for, having accomplishments or taking their first steps, because that helps cement new habits. So those are the five components in a nutshell, but there's, longer explanations in my books.
Oh, so good. I love that. I love that. And you know what's so great is I've had now, I don't know, like dozens of people come on the podcast and talk about how to overcome binge eating and emotional eating and any form of out of control eating, which is really, I mean, that is sort of a little sort of top of the umbrella where we're talking about all the things. Even stress eating is a form of emotional eating, and boredom eating is a form of emotional eating, and it's all out of control eating. And what's so interesting is that we all kind of have similar strategies, and yet it all comes down to the exact same thing. Those that are truly effective around helping people overcome out of control eating, we're really talking about the brain. We're not talking about the outside habits. We're really understanding that the drive is coming from this place, like you said, the lower brain that is actually out of our control. And so when we realize that and we can differentiate that, those are the tools that are the most effective. And we stop, of course, the restrict, and we stop the triggers that are driving that in order to fully heal and to overcome it. However, it's just so interesting that we're all speaking the same language because there's something here. And along those lines, I'm just super curious, and I'm going to ask this, but I'm just going to go ahead and be bold and ask. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts around organizations such as Overeaters Anonymous or other organizations where you are staying sort of in the label of being an out of control eater or a binge eater or an emotional eater. How do you feel about that process of therapy?
It's kind of like what we talked about with therapy, is that if it works for you, great. Like, I would never want to take away something that works for someone. If thinking that you're basically powerless around foods and you have to avoid them, and that works for you, then I think it's okay. And some people just feel like their life is easier when they stay away from certain foods. And as long as they can do that without calorie restricting and without feeling like they're really deprived, then I think that's okay. Okay, so that's like, initial thought. But also, I want to really empower people to believe that they can learn to have control around any food. So Overeaters Anonymous typically has people abstain from their trigger foods like sugar and flour and things like that. So once you have that mindset that if I have one bite, I'm going to get out of control, a lot of times it becomes self-fulfilling. So I've really tried to teach people that, yeah, your primitive response may be out of your control, but what you choose to do is not. And it's not always like instant process for people. Sometimes it takes a lot of practice to get to that point, but it's so freeing when you can realize like you can be around any food, you can have any food and not be out of control. And of course, that's assuming people don't have food allergies or sensitivities or things. And in those cases, of course, it's fine to abstain from those foods that really create a problem for your health. But I mean, I think there's good points in anything, but I do think that having an empowerment mindset is just very beneficial to recovery.
Right, I agree with that. And the reason why I brought that up, and these are just my thoughts that I just want to share, is I really believe in the power of identity, and that actually is what drives and fuels the majority of our behavior. It's who we think we are. It's our self-image, essentially. And so my only beef with that around changing habits and really releasing patterns and behaviors that no longer serve us also have to come with changing our identity. And so if in the past, for example, for myself, I was an athlete growing up, always an athlete, and that was just how I saw myself. And when I was struck by a car when I was 16 years old and told that I couldn't play sports again, my identity changed just in those moments, those years where I wasn't able to relate as an athlete. I just felt very out of tune with myself, out of tune with what lit me up. And it wasn't until I changed my mindset to that of an athlete again that I was actually able to overcome all of the limitations and really find a way to strengthen my body and to really do a lot of things that the doctors had said that I wasn't allowed to do. I'd actually defied all of the medical advice that was given to me at the time. But it all came because of how I viewed myself. If I had viewed myself as a person who's had back surgery twice, who has a lot of back problems, who always needs a place to lie down, who always needs pain medication, and I just accepted that as who I am, I just don't believe that I would have been where I am today. I wouldn't have had that faith or that knowing that I wanted to come out of that I wanted to release that and step into something new, or that there was even a possibility for me to release that and become that athlete that I've always envisioned myself to be. And so I've always found that whatever we continue to describe ourselves are, we have to continue to struggle with it. So I'm going to overcome binge eating, but I have to continue to say I'm a binge eater. And to me, there's just a very, very big conflict. Or I'm going to stop drinking, but I also have to keep saying I'm an alcoholic. To me, that's just an internal conflict because I'm either an alcoholic or I'm not. And yes, I have maybe old patterns and behaviors, and we all have this, by the way. We all have vices. And if you're listening today and you have a different perspective, I would love to hear it. I would love to hear your perspective around this because I love what Catherine said, and I agree. If it works for you, awesome. Don't change it because there is something for everybody. But just from my perspective, I'm always curious around how do you release that internal conflict if you still consider yourself this way, but you also want to be the complete opposite? Because if I just decide that I would be the complete opposite, I am not a binge eater, I'm not a binge eater, then my behaviors will be very different. I won't actually have that point of struggle because it's who I believe I am. I'll even start to act in that way. I'll start to speak in that way. I will start to set my environment up to support that self-image. And so I've always found that self-image is so incredibly important in driving behavior or terminating the behavior that no longer serves us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all of that's amazing. I love your perspective on that. And you're not a binge eater, but you're still calling yourself that because you're involved in Overeaters Anonymous or something like that. And I think from the moment I had my first time that I dismissed the urges, I call it dismissing. And I really consider myself not a binge eater. I was like, oh, I don't do that anymore. And honestly, I binged two more times after I read that book by Rational Recovery. I binged two more times because I didn't really recognize what was going on. My primitive brain kind of got the best of me, but I still was like, oh, that's my primitive brain. I'm not a binge eater. And I really think I captured that identity. And, you know, I haven't binged for 18 years now, so it's been a long time. And I can't imagine still sitting here today calling myself a binge eater.
Right. So powerful. So powerful. I love this conversation so much. And I love your energy, Catherine. I think we need to do a little bit more of this and reconnect and chat a little bit more about this topic. And so, as we conclude our time together here today, was there anything else that you wanted to share that you did not have a chance to yet?
I just think encouraging people to believe that they can overcome this. I think I was in a place for a long time of what am I going to do? I can't overcome this. And I made a promise to myself that if I ever did, that I would write about it to help others. And I'm thankful and happy that I kept that promise to myself. And I hope that my books, I know that they have helped a lot of people, but that I didn't believe it was possible for me. And there's like literally nothing special about me. I'm kind of a mess in a lot of areas of my life, but I learned that that doesn't mean that you have to binge or engage in harmful behaviors. So I hope that my story can inspire you to also believe it's possible for you.
Thank you so much. That was so beautiful. And I actually want to ask you one more question, and it's just around your maybe fitness lifestyle right now. You said growing up you were a runner, you were super involved in sports, and then kind of in high school and college, because of that disordered relationship with food, you had to release that part of you. And I'm just curious where you are now in your fitness journey.
Yeah, it's a good question. It's kind of evolved over the years. Like once I stopped the real extreme overexercise because of the binging, and that was my form of purging, I didn't really want any sort of extreme exercise in my life. So I just did a lot of gentle things and jogging and yoga and stuff like that. And over the years, I've got back into running here and there and did some races and things, and but nothing like super competitive. Recently, I've been more into weightlifting and trying to build strength, and I really like it. It helps me sort of recapture that part of my identity. And my 15-year-old daughter's really into the weightlifting, so we go lift weights together, and it's really fun. So, I mean, I exercise most days, maybe 5, 6 days a week, not for too long, but it's definitely a big part of my life, and I like being fit, you know.
So great. I love this conversation so much. I love you. You're a beautiful soul. I love that you do what you do, and I hope you continue to inspire others. And I'm sure that you will. And I think this is just the beginning for you. And so, if someone wanted to reach out to you, Catherine, to connect with you today or to learn more about you, where could they go to do that?
Yeah, and thank you so much, Sherry, before I share that. You're amazing and I love the work that you do. And it was so great being on you being on my podcast. And my podcast is the Brain Over Binge podcast. So that's a good place anyone can start to find me and just get a wealth of information on how to overcome this. I also have a website, brainoverbinge.com. That's where I have my books, my course. We offer one-on-one coaching. I have an amazing coach, Julie Mann, who overcame 40 years of binging, and she helps people. And yeah, so all the coaching and course and everything is on brainoverbinge.com.
Amazing. Thank you so much for this conversation, Catherine. I loved it.
Oh, thank you so much, Sherry.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.